Last year, I began my address by telling you about a social media post by a young person. And it was posted on the Instagram page of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Wilmington in the United States. And you might remember it read, "Dear Church with the Rainbow Flag, thank you for being brave enough to put a flag up. I'm not religious, but if there is a God, I am glad they have you. Sincerely, a thankful human." And this year I say again, I do hope God, Allah, Yahweh, the creator of beauty, love, and truth, is glad to have us. And we are glad to have each other in pride. In preparing for today's service, I came across a very short video of James Baldwin and Maya Angelou, and they were in conversation. You might have heard of both of them. They were both civil rights activists, and they were both writers. It was Maya who once said, "Try to be a rainbow in someone's cloud." Now, they shared a deep respect for each other's work, and they held very intimate conversations with each other, and they were televised on American public TV. And the programs were called Conversation with a Native Son. Now, one of those conversations really struck me, and this is how it went. "Where can human experience take you? All I know about human life is, if I love you, I love you. And if I love you and duck it, I die. I see the nature of love as the ability to dare, to challenge despair and dare to love. You cannot make a decision to fall in love with a person of one particular gender. You have to trust life." Now, this reminded me of a short poem by Iranian Sufi poet, the wonderful Hafiz. It's called "I Felt Love." "How did the rose ever open its heart and give to this world all its beauty? It felt the encouragement of light against its being. Otherwise, we all remain too frightened." Last year at our service, I said, "Embracing pride encourages gentleness and anger, but also strength and joy. Members of the pride community endure hatred, oppression, violence, and isolation. And it is pride that should be an act of resistance, a protest, a coming out. I am what I am, and what I am needs no excuses. Gay, straight, black, brown, white, cis, trans, non-binary, asexual, woman, man, believer, or unbeliever." I named this service Faithfully Queer. I do not like that word. It is used to hurt and insult, and I am sorry to myself, first and foremost, for using it. But pride is protest, and I will use the words to disarm anyone who tries to reduce and insult me. Perhaps we all need to be better at disarming anyone who seeks to take away your dignity and self-worth. But what do I mean by faithfully queer? Firstly, faithful to yourself. Be yourself. As a senior youth worker supporting and supervising a team of youth workers, that was often the very first piece of advice I would offer. What about faithful to your religious or non-religious convictions? Well, if you investigate the major world religions, and also the key humanist or non-religious ethics or beliefs, you will find a number of key values that are common to all. These are compassion and generosity. They hold that all creatures, all of creation, should be treated with respect. all include texts that are considered sacred or foundational, and they all mark milestones from death to birth. Now, you may argue that we don't need a Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, or any other religious teaching to direct our right actions. And this is true. Humanity has been around much longer than many of these faiths. But it is these faiths that have fashioned the world we know. It is these faiths that greatly influences the sky we live under, the earth we walk upon. All of these faiths teach peace, and they attempt to explain why is there something rather than nothing. Karen Armstrong, in her epic book, The Case for God, says that people have always sought to enhance and fulfill their humanity by engaging in religious rituals. Religion often provided shelter from tyranny and oppression. And this was certainly the case in the very early Christian community. So, being faithfully queer is to expect and hope that your faith community would love and protect you, and in turn offer that same love and protection to those who need it. You know that to be queer is not about who you have sex with. It is simply to fall out of society's deeply held belief of what is expected or normal. A church or faith system would collaborate with a state actor to place boundaries on what it means to be human being. And a theocratic model society, which described much of the world we grew up in, would have looked to natural law or other laws for guidance. And in that context, to be queer was to be non-conformist. When I found this spiritual movement, this church, this sacred space, this holy community, I began to develop a sense that I was done talking, done arguing, done debating. Because I had found a religious community that proudly declares that a person's gender and sexuality is to be respected and celebrated. And they're not just words. It witnesses to this by providing same-sex couples with a church under whose roof they can declare their love and get married. Further, it celebrates pride by marching in the parade and having today's pride service, which I think is now a firmly established tradition. For me then, was I done calling out those religious and secular leaders that sought to strip members of the LGBTIQ plus community of their dignity and right to proudly exist? So what about calling them in? And I'll expand on that idea in a second. Last year, I also spoke about what the Hebrew and Christian scriptures say about this, or better still, what they do not say. I also summarized the position of some of the other great world religions, and I outlined my conviction that all of us have a unique code, a unique set of biological traits that all have a spark of the divine. All are connected to the vital energy that gives life and sustenance to creation, as described in our second reading. And at this stage, I wish to point out, particularly for those who might be new to this community or who are here for the first time, this community, this church community, is not spiritually or religiously homogeneous. We don't all believe the same things. We do not require a confession of faith. We are diverse in our beliefs. But we are all committed to seeking the truth and listening to each other. Today I'm outlining my thoughts, my beliefs, and they are always subject to be challenged, and they're always subject to change. I said also last year that we are told that God made us in their own image, And if that is so, my gender and sexuality reflects God's image. God knit me together in my mother's womb, as the psalm says. Yes, I am who I am. No excuses needed. Male and female, God made them. Yes, of course. But within that spectrum of male and female, we find diversity and difference, not a strict binary. We know that because of our experience and the obvious diversity we encounter in the world. It is beautiful, and it calls for celebration. Now, I also spoke about the supposed condemnation of same-sex relationships in Scripture. Now, I'm not going to repeat what I said. Just to say very briefly, I expressed my belief and that of many biblical scholars that I trust that the Christian and Hebrew scriptures do not suggest that a person's gender identity, gender expression, or sexuality affects their worthiness to be loved, accepted, respected, or treated with dignity. And I will add today that religious people, Christians in particular, of all shapes and sizes, should ask themselves, do you believe the interpretation that serves your identity politics? Or do you read it in light of your own and others' lived experience? And by the way, you are free to reject what you read, particularly that which insults your soul. This is a particularly Unitarian tradition. And for me to be a man of conviction and of faith, I must embrace all that is me and contribute to achieving a human community that is just, that is free, embracing of diversity, and be respectfully tolerant towards those who do not share all that I believe. And rather than call them out, which I probably did last year, and is often our default position, that approach often leads to conflict and at worst, violence. So instead, I might call them in to have a conversation and also to listen. Words alone, a great speech or a talk or even debate, rarely changes hearts and minds. Because it is through human contact, when you come in contact with people who are different from you. Now, what brought about success in the same-sex marriage referendum 10 years ago was all those who had someone in their lives who were part of the Pride community. It seemed that success was achieved by calling in all those who might not have readily voted in support of this beautiful community and their right to marry the love of their lives. And you might remember 10 years ago, the campaign had a number of key things. There was personal storytelling by people seeking a yes vote. They were visible and they featured in all media. And the campaign focused not on laws and rights, but on love and family and fairness. It was emotionally resonant. The people were less worried about going against what they might have once believed was God's law. And we moved from the experience of authority to the authority of experience. And of course, the referendum had broad political support. Now, that's not always an indication of success, but it was this time. So back to calling in rather than calling out. Loretta Ross is an African-American activist. She's an academic, an author, and an absolute inspiration. And she says that in the span of her career and life, running my mouth never seemed to accomplish what I needed it to. And she is worried that we might be trapped in a calling out culture, in a cancel culture. Now, having said that, we don't wish to let another person's bigotry go unchallenged. Assume, she says, that they have within them goodness and empathy. Call on people, she says, to embrace their goodness and compassion, their empathy, and call on their ability to love. All you're admitting at that moment is that there is a possibility that they are as complicated as you are. Everybody deserves to be heard and respected. And my question then for Loretta was, is a call in a call out done with love? And I can't help but look for examples that demonstrate this. You might have some examples yourselves. I'm thinking of arguments or disagreements you might have had with a friend, with a brother or a sister, with your dad, with your neighbor, maybe the person sitting beside you now. A call in rather than a call out. Was this behind the Good Friday Agreement? Is this what the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission was about? Was this what Jesus did throughout his dealings with people? And I'm thinking of Gandhi, who said that non-violence was mightier than the mightiest weapon of destruction devised by the ingenuity of man. We seek to end conflicts between people, not with more violence, but by talking, engaging in a calling in to resolve the conflict. And rather than calling out someone or some group as racist or homophobic, I might say, I believe in the inherent dignity of all. I believe we can embrace difference. I believe we should listen to his or her life experiences and try to understand where they are at. I might say, I don't understand. Explain it to me. And I thought of turning the other cheek so I can hear all sides of the story or argument. Now, I accuse myself of naivety sometimes, and you might too, but it's worth a shot. So Loretta's advice really speaks to me. It enables me to be faithful to the Christian way or the humanist way, but essentially a human way of responding to those who attack you because you are different. Now, having said all of that, I am not done challenging those who seek to strip the Pride community of their dignity and right to be themselves. But perhaps I'll do less of the calling out and try a call in. Finally, I can't let this moment pass without reference to the continuing violence we are experiencing in our human community and how we must seek to be faithful to some basic human values of justice. And violence comes in both action and word. There is a deeply destructive loop of conflict and suffering currently at play. Now, that perhaps there always has been, but we do not cease to change it. Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Myanmar, Burkina Faso, Ukraine, Palestine, Iran, Israel. Reverend Ian Kilroy is the abbot of the Dublin Zen Center, and he wrote in the Irish Times recently, "The Christian idea of bearing witness is vital and important now, but so too is an understanding of the Buddhist teaching of karma, which shows that actions conform to the principle of causality. Actions have consequences." And another key Buddhist teaching is that we should work to eliminate the root causes of suffering and conflict. The Islamic teaching in the Quran implores us to walk the earth humbly, and when the ignorant and foolish address you harshly or improperly, just say words of peace. And there are some examples of call-ins. The Buddha taught, hatred does not cease through hatred at any time. Hatred ceases through love. In conclusion, I offer you the words from Rumi, another Persian poet, and he wrote the words we sang before our service began. He was a 13th century deeply religious Muslim, and he gently invites us to avoid overloading the image of God with superfluous structures and complications, another truly Unitarian idea. And in talking about what unites us as people of faith from different traditions, he declares, "The lamps are different, but the light is the same. It comes from beyond." And he says, "A lifetime without love is of no account. Love is the water of life. Drink it down with heart and soul." Amen.